Now, we speak regularly here with people from the SAN Hospital, Sydney Adventist Hospital, the great professionals from the SAN, as part of our medical segment we do. And tonight we're going to talk about gastrointestinal surgery and the huge progress that's been made so it can be done via robotics. I've always had a great regard for people who are surgeons, because if you think it through, you have to have, your hand-eye coordination would have to be, by definition, pretty amazing, wielding a scalpel. But these days it can be done through, they talk about keyhole surgery, and then they talk about robotics, where you're actually doing the surgery via computer. One of the people that does this is Dr. Christos Apostolou. He's a specialist upper gastrointestinal surgeon from the SAN. He joins us on the line now. Doctor, good evening to you.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, be happy to correct anything I say, because I'm a layperson with all of this. But have I got it roughly right that once upon a time you did have to open people up, you then had to do it very precisely by hand? That's all changed.
Indeed it has, and let me compliment you first on getting my pronunciation of my surname correct. But yes, it has changed quite a lot, you know, from the initial days of surgery where most of the operations were done in an open manner. And now we've expanded to laparoscopy, and now we're using the robot to enhance our surgical skills. So we're still driving the process, but it sort of smooths out a lot of the human imperfections, to say.
Can I ask you, so I've always been intrigued by this, because when you were training to be a surgeon, did they actually assess you because I guess when you started, you might still do it, wielding a scalpel, is that something, I know I'd be absolutely hopeless.
Well, you see that, I don't know if you would be, but it's not really, I mean, a lot of it's got to do with a person's temperament.
Yes.
And obviously a certain amount of intelligence and integrity and so on. But there's no real measure of the person's technical abilities from the start. I mean, there's obviously a lot of peer review and people do self-select.
Yep.
So it's not sort of formally done, but maybe in the future it will be.
Yeah. All right. So then now we've got this robotic surgery. So I assume it's a long arm and you're operating it via computer. It's almost like a PlayStation. Would it be like that?
Indeed, a PlayStation. So, I mean, I probably still encourage kids to stay in school. But the most important thing is that it allows a replication of, if you look at your wrist, and the way it sort of moves around and articulates.
Yep.
A lot of the laparoscopic instruments are like long sort of metal rods, so they can't do that as easily. Whereas with a robotic instrument, you have a small little hand inside the patient, or four small hands, and they actually allow you to do the work that you would do in an open manner in a much smaller scale. And the other advantage is that obviously your vision is magnified and it's in 3D.
So just to clarify this, so you've got a screen, you've got the little hand that then goes in through one of the body cavities, it goes in through the intestine, wherever. You can explain this for us, but you're using a 3D imaging to see what's in there.
Exactly. So the actual approach into the patient is quite similar to laparoscopy. There are some little tubes, little metal tubes that we use to allow the instruments to enter the abdominal cavity, and then we insufflate or inflate the tummy with carbon dioxide, because that's how we allow some space to develop. And then we use those three or four instruments, controlling them from a console, which is a little bit further apart from the patient, but still within the same room, obviously, because we need to be aware of the surroundings. And then we can manipulate those instruments and those organs in the sort of manner that we would need to.
Yeah, so I mean, this is everything in medicine, and particularly the advances are very expensive. And so, how many of these things would you say have at the SAN?
Oh, so the SAN, we're actually very fortunate to have, because the SAN has devoted our care in order to progressing medicine. And a lot of these costs, which would be unavailable in somebody, say, in another hospital or in the public sector, a lot of these costs are actually covered by the SAN and the SAN Foundation. Because, say, for example, a new one of these robots would be approximately $3 million. Maybe I'm incorrect in that, but somewhere in that price.
We actually have
two. And also a lot of maintenance and all those things that are covered by the SAN, so we allow the patients to get the best care possible.
Yeah. I often talk to, when we have conversations here with, you know, brain surgeons or people involved in the heart, these are remarkable organs. The stomach is the core to so much of our well-being, isn't it?
Indeed. I mean, no, the digestive system maybe takes a bit of a backseat compared to the other sort of more showboating organs, but we do need it. And it's actually a fascinating accumulation or sort of constellation of organs. You know, the pancreas that we know has a terrible cancer, which, you know, attributes a lot of suffering to us. But it's such a beautiful organ that it can regulate your glucose metabolism to a minuscule amount. And you know that when people become diabetic, either through natural causes or removal of the pancreas, it's so difficult to control that. So it's actually a fascinating organ system.
Yeah, I know. With the cancer, just to, and I guess we can take a step back and look at these things with the cancers of the liver and the pancreas and some of these other areas. We're still grappling with cures.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, that's still the goal. It remains the goal, and the percentage is increasing, but it's still low overall. The advancements of chemotherapy and also what we offer at the SAN is the multidisciplinary care, which is a whole group of doctors of different specialties, surgeons, gastroenterologists, oncologists. We all sit together and try and work out the best treatment plans for patients, and that's how the patients get the best sort of deal out of the whole lot. But, you know, things have improved and survival rates are improving, but we obviously want them to get better.
Yeah. So when you go in with the robotic arms into these areas, what are you actually doing? What is the surgery trying to achieve and what problem are you solving?
I mean, the common sort of conditions that we treat that are amenable to it would be something like some pancreatic resection. So if the tumor of the pancreas is in the tail of the pancreas, and it's actually only removing approximately something which is about, you know, 10 centimeters by 3 centimeters. So it's not a large piece of tissue. But beforehand, we'd have to do a 20-centimeter incision to access that because it's very deep in the body. Whereas with this robot, we can actually get right onto the organ and dissect out all the appropriate structures, the blood vessels and so on, in a safe manner and minimize the patient's discomfort after the surgery.
Yeah. Do you know what's down the track? Because I know in every field, people try and think, well, how is my business going to be in 5, 10, 20 years' time, or even when I'm gone? Do you think about it or have an idea where your business is going?
I don't think we're ready to get rid of surgeons just yet. I do think, you know, from oncology, other things will develop. But from our side, what I can see is, you know, obviously AI, you know, the artificial intelligence is always going to be lurking in the background.
Should we hear that in everything? It's in everything, isn't it?
I know. Although I do think from a cognitive point of view, from like a human brain, I still think there's a long way to go for it to be replicated, but that's another discussion altogether.
Yeah.
But I think what we'll do is these machines are going to get much more sensitive, and they'll be able to sort of self-guard onto tumor cells that we'll be able to target. So we'll do it in combination with a machine.
Yeah, so once it goes in there, it might be able to find a tumor and see the tumor and do the work itself.
Well, you see, we can do some things. We can inject certain substances, and we use different cameras to see things that we cannot see with the naked eye, like lymph nodes or lymph channels or biliary systems. So those are going to get more and more sort of diverse.
I've got one final question for you. As someone who knows how the pancreas and the stomach and the things that process the food we put into our bodies, you know how it works, and you know what impact certain foods have on that part of us, which is such a part of us, a key part of us. Does that impact what you eat?
Indeed. Just less sugar, more smaller meals.
Okay, just because, I mean, the thing about sugar is it's not great for you, is it?
It's not terrible, but simple sugars, especially, you know, once you get into adulthood, there's not much role for them.
Yeah, okay, all right. We'll try and take that on board. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's Dr. Christos Apostolou from the Sydney Adventist Hospital, where they are harnessing the latest advancements in health while giving you the attention, respect, and care you deserve.